Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Tori, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the show. Bright Monday to you, November 7th. Tori, today's before the election.
I'm shaking in my boots. And I'm wearing boots.
You're wearing boots.
Thank you.
She's so certain in her victory.
Who,
tomorrow,
me?
You.
I'm not certain about anything.
No,
honey.
You are.
I'm nervous.
Really?
Oh, my God. That's why I'm shivering my boots.
I thought you were walking around. I thought you were saying that sarcastically.
No.
Meaning that, hey, I got it all.
No, at no point.
But I think you should. You know, I'm walking around knowing that she's probably going to win.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're an idiot if you don't. But I think, for honestly, I think she'll win by, hopefully, if she wins by 3 to 5 points, it'd be a huge thing for us. But what scares me is that they got this close. That
is not...
good.
I know.
So it's a tense time for everyone in the world,
right.
Globally, this has affected a lot of people. They say it traumatized women. The APA put out a soothing mechanisms for people dealing with election, dealing with stress, meditation. So it's been a really
bizarre. Trump-related stress.
No, it's like both. It's like the anxiety of the debates. I mean, everything about this election was at a 10 out of weirdness,
right.
And anxiety provoking. I mean, they're just, it's been a weird election, excuse me.
It has. But, you know, again, the polls, I don't know how accurate they are. I mean, do you remember in recent memory a poll that predicted, like, landslides and stuff?
Yeah.
They're always very close, aren't they?
No, JFK landslide? Is going to be, in the 60s.
Yeah,
had
well, that
landslides.
Was a long time ago. But, you know, when Reagan won and then Bill Clinton had a landslide,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah, that's
so
like.
So I don't think they were predicted at the time.
I think they showed more than the margin of error, which is usually about a 3 to 5 point range.
Yeah.
So if you are going to like a 4 to 7, that's kind of considered a landslide.
Mm.
So I think landslide is not like double digits. It's almost unheard of.
Mm.
So if she wins by 3 to 5, it's making a statement. Let's just hope she doesn't do the Bush Gore Chad thing with that ugly guy with the magnifying glass thing.
Or Trump will cause it or something.
Yeah.
You know?
Or there's a revolution. They say the militia is going to come up.
Yeah. So a lot to talk about. We have a fascinating guest here. We'll bring him in
very
in just
exciting.
A moment. So we'll leave more politics till later. And just a couple things. Recreational marijuana. I just wanted to bring up the fact that, for those of you who don't know, it's Prop 64 in California.
Don't forget, stoners.
Exactly. Vote
don't
yes.
Forget.
Don't think twice. Exactly. Don't forget by the time you get to the poll.
Prop 64.
What you suppose, you
exactly.
know. Exactly. So don't go high if you can help it. But you know what? That's what I'm saying. The way it's written makes it uncertain.
Yeah.
Because, like, for example, they're going to be allowed to do commercials on TV for pot. I mean, why are you allowing this? We don't do commercials for cigarettes. We don't do it for alcohol. So why?
Wait, you don't see alcoholic beverages on
TV? Have you ever seen, like,
for an ad?
Well, actually, wait, beer, but
Di Serono, like, yeah, of course.
Oh, really?
Jack vodka, of course. Absolutely. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I never realized it.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't watch any TV. Oh. Or maybe on CNN, they don't put those commercials.
Yeah, you see
that's
it with
the only
like.
Channel I watch.
I mean, you do a ton of it. I auditioned for some.
Wow.
I was supposed to be a Dos Equis ad.
That's true. They do have beer. I know at least
and they
that
do,
and wine.
Yeah, and Michael, I think Imperial, he does the vodka ads. You know Captain Jack, where they make the Jack.
Mm, yeah.
I'm making the stance. The Captain Jack, that's a Jack Daniel. Yeah.
Jack Daniel. Yeah.
Okay, that's rum,
oh,
I think.
Oh, okay. So I guess I don't watch the shows where they advertise these things, you know, which is a lot of sports probably.
And they still advertise for cigarettes. You just can't have
photographs.
The person like, yeah.
Photographs,
for, yeah.
right.
Yeah.
But then, you know, I mean, you can keep kids away from those magazines or whatever, you
mm-hmm.
know, but not from TV. But I think that's going to get in the way, you know. Although they're saying it's going to bring a lot of money.
Yeah.
But you know what? Some people may not want it. I mean, look, the growers, the illegal growers definitely don't want it legal. That's one thing. The second thing is users, they're going to put a 15% sales tax on that. That's a lot of money.
Yeah, but at the same time, when you legitimize an entire industry and you give credit and you regulate and you start having taxes and you get a surplus, all of that sort of beats out an underground network of people getting arrested for stupid things. So I think the more legitimizing you can do to pot, the better. I think if you have advertisements, it's not going to be, hey, dude, let's smoke weed. And like, I think it's going to be about relaxation or at least about pain management. So I don't have a problem with it. Yeah. I think if you're showing me Grand Theft Auto and killing cops in the street for a stupid commercial, I'm okay to see someone smoke a joint.
I see. And that's, you know, I agree with that, except that I don't think we're in the majority. And
I don't know. California's pretty mellow.
It is, but there's a lot of holier-than-thou attitude here, too.
And also, we're in L.A. I mean, what I said before, like, the Central California is not as, you know, vape pen as out here. Well, exactly. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
So we do have a contentious fight. I just watched the Bill Maher interview with President Obama about marijuana and how disappointed he was in his drug stance. And Bill Maher put it to him pretty hostily, saying, you know, you could have been arrested. You smoked weed.
Right.
And so could I.
And you did something illegal.
And, right. And he's like, and you arrest, and you said part of your landmark, you know, things you wanted to check off was changing the drug war, and you haven't. And he didn't have a great response.
Yeah.
So I was a little disappointed, but he did a lot of other things that I'm like hugely proud of. So
yeah. Well, good.
Interesting.
Yeah. You know what? It'll be nice when he rides into the sunset and
I don't think we move on.
You don't think he will?
No, I don't think he's going anywhere.
Oh, okay.
I think there's a lot.
Well, no, he's probably going to be like in the public circuits and stuff.
Oh, I mean,
right?
Like, I hope Michelle runs for something.
Yeah, right?
Ugh, my heart. I hope she runs for my heart.
Michelle.
God dang, she'd win anything. PTA mom, anything. She's fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Did you have a nice weekend? Is your husband back?
My husband's back.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's why you're looking sunshiny today.
I did look homeless for about 9 days. It got really bad. It was after the third peanut butter and jelly sandwich that I'm like, hey, maybe you should pick yourself up on the floor. Go outside.
Good.
No, I was actually really proud of myself. I kept the place really clean. The dogs didn't die. No one died.
Good.
Nothing was burnt.
The plant didn't die.
No, nothing was burnt. No, yeah. I don't have plants.
Yeah.
But I took care of myself. I drove out. I did things. Went to auditions. Did my own thing. I'm just very
codependent. There you go. Yes. You need to be able to be independent.
I know.
Too, you know?
So I'm a very codependent. I think it was good for me.
It was a good thing.
I think
for
it
you.
Was good for me.
Yeah. Good.
I made coffee. Like little shit like this, I couldn't do.
Yeah. Right.
But then I was like, oh, I have to go to CVS, and I hate going. And then I'm like, there's always so much craziness. And then I go. And there was crazy, like they didn't have shopping bags and there was someone on the floor like crying like a grown man. I'm
really?
Like, this is why I don't.
Yeah,
come
that's
here.
Why you don't go to stores.
No. Amazon drone me.
Yeah, there
Amazon
you go,
drone me.
You know, and that's why all the retail is going away, you
right.
know, because they haven't put a lot of attention to customer service.
CVS
stuff,
has given up. I went to the woman. She goes, you have no bag. She goes, we just have this little bag. She goes, you have to pay for it. And then she looks at me and goes, just take it. I hate this job.
Yeah, right?
I know.
What is it?
So bad.
And so they tell you no plastic bags, but now you can buy plastic bags.
But they
bags.
Were out of them.
Right.
So it was like, and a lot of homeless were there to collect the bags, so there was a lot of
right.
anger.
So, you know, they try to get you to buy it so you use it multiple times.
Right.
But nobody does, you know?
You
so
forget it in your trunk every time.
Yeah.
And then they give you the CVS receipt that's like a dead ancient scroll that's continually coming. I don't, just put it on my card.
Exactly. Yeah. I know. Well, you know, I just wanted to bring up the movie I went to see.
Oh.
I took my father to see Hacksaw Ridge.
Oh.
And that was, I didn't know who was playing in it. And I forgot his name, but he was the latest Spider-Man. Do you know his name? The skinny guy?
Andrew Garfield?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. He was a star. You like him?
I do. I think he's sexy. Is he Brit? Is he a Brit?
Yeah.
First of all.
Yeah, he is, but he plays an American
soldier.
Oh, he
has a fantastic American accent. And he's still dating Emma Watson? I mean, Emma Stone?
I don't know.
They were together for a while in Spider-Man. Yeah. But he is a fantastic actor and was in Facebook, The Social Network. Playing one of Mark Zuckerberg's friends.
That's true, right?
He's a great little star to watch. He's got great charisma. So how
he
was
he?
He
is. I mean, he carried the movie.
As
many
he's a
actors,
little guy, though. He's great.
And as many actors as they were and stars, good actors and stuff, he definitely
held
the whole movie because it was about him, about that character.
Oh, is this the one where he doesn't have a gun? It's a true story.
Yes.
And he goes into the military. He goes into the war without a gun.
Right.
So
because
is he a pacifist
wants to be a medic.
Oh,
yeah,
see.
He was what they call objectors, right?
Yeah, conscientious objector.
Conscientious objector, CO. So, Yeah, and but he insisted on going to the army, and they give him a hard time. And I don't want to give it away, but it's a true story.
Right.
And it was amazing. You know, it's just a cool movie, but you have to be prepared for a lot of gore. I mean, there's a lot of like.
They show Al Gore? Is Al Gore in it?
No, not Al Gore, but gory scenes.
Yeah.
You see legs blown off and guts and everything.
It's a war movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
was it? Did it remind you of Saving Private Ryan?
Yes.
Okay, so that was pretty cool. That level of gore.
Yes.
Got it. From
realism.
Care Bears to Saving Private Ryan, it's a more Saving Private Ryan.
Okay. There you go.
So yeah, but I kind of I don't like a war movie without that. I feel like the grit and being right in there is so fantastic.
Yeah, I know.
I like a good old Full Metal Jacket movie.
Yeah, right?
If I'm going to watch a war movie, you know
exactly.
What I mean?
Then yeah. Be prepared to see this exactly. And see what the people experience too.
So this was his big like first carrying of a film. Good for
definitely.
Him.
He
liked him,
and he'll probably be nominated for an Oscar
wow.
easily.
Wow.
Easily. I mean,
wow.
he carried the movie very well.
Threw down there.
And I didn't see, so I guess I must have seen him in Social Network. I didn't remember that one.
He just slips into
and
characters
well. And I did not
well.
See him in Spider-Man, so this was the first time I saw him.
He's very,
really
he grabs you, yeah. And he's kind of hot.
I guess he is.
I like him.
To you, everybody's hot, it seems.
That
you
is
know?
Not true.
You're very interested in
Joe
men,
Pesci.
Which is a good thing.
Not hot.
Not hot for you?
Danny DeVito.
Okay,
not that
well,
hot.
Yeah, they're too old for you.
No,
but at one time they were.
No, like, you know who I loved all the way? Paul Newman. He could have been 105. I would have slept with that man.
Really?
Oh, my God.
Wow.
Is that creepy?
It is.
Okay.
No, it's not at all. You know me. I don't care about ages. For me, the bigger gap, the better.
Oh, I know.
No, I'm kidding.
Sick, sick man.
Yeah.
Sick man. Did you hear about Beyonce went on with the Dixie Chicks?
Beyonce went... No.
She went on with the CMAs, and it was like kind of a big deal because it's a crossover of hip-hop, and also like you don't see a lot of black people at CMAs. So it was this big moment, and then, of course, comments started to come on the CMA's website, and they had to take it down.
Really?
Because racial comments, yeah.
Wow.
So we get so far in the country, and then we're like, take two steps back, or 800. So it was a great, great performance. If you haven't seen it, you should go YouTube it.
Yeah. Sounds good.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we're going to bring in our guest now, who is sitting here patiently.
Yes.
Thank you for being patient, because I know he's got a lot to say. And is he came in here shot out of a cannon, pretty much. The man has energy at 10 o'clock in the morning. That's what we like. Go ahead and get to the
Hello,
microphone.
Sam.
Hello.
Hi, Tori.
Mr. Richard Bacon Woo-hoo. In the studio. Welcome to the show.
Delighted to be here. I like your show a lot. You can just...
Thank you.
You talk about... You cover Paul Newman and sex and plastic bags and marijuana.
There you go.
And the Dixie Chicks.
And he comes in here and he goes, what's the topic? We don't have a topic.
No.
We're just
You've
all
covered
over the
12
place.
Already.
Exactly.
And
there
10
you
past
go.
10.
It's true.
There you go.
He's another hot Brit. For those of you who are trying to imagine, like very sexy, like, yeah. Now I'm uncomfortable and I'm scooting over here.
Right.
But just picture.
Yeah.
Very cute.
That's all right.
That's okay.
I'm
you see, behind the microphone, she can say things. We can say things
that's
to
right.
people that we wouldn't normally say.
I am glad that you find me hotter than Danny DeVito.
I do.
Yeah,
That bar is high. That bar is super high. And he ducks right under it.
I think I'm somewhere between Andrew Garfield and Danny DeVito.
That's true.
Yeah, that's
spectrum.
Cool.
It's a 1-2. Yeah. Little column A, little column B, to be honest.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. So, Richard, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, pleasure.
Are you visiting here?
Well, I lived in LA until 8 weeks ago. I've now moved to the West Village in New York, and I miss it here. I was here for a year and a half. Obviously, I'm from London.
Right.
And it's just an easier way of life here. LA. It's a nicer place.
I like,
the pacing is slower, too.
But people debate a lot whether, you know, LA versus New York. And I think the truth is that LA wins.
LA wins every time.
It is. And
right?
Almost
there's a lot here. Are you originally from London?
Yeah.
That's why. You
why
like
do you
the
say
city.
It with that
You're like
excitement
the
in your voice?
The metropolitan kind of guy.
Yeah, but look, so of the three cities, I would say London is maybe the best all-round city. New York has the most to do, but LA is the best to live.
Livability.
That's true, right? I mean, weather,
everything.
You got it pretty much the way it is, I think, you know? So at what point
in
did
New
you...
New York people... They shout at you. They're
all terrible.
Quite angry. When I rented my house, I paid my deposit for the house a day late. And it was only because when you transfer money from a UK bank
it
to an American bank.
It takes a couple
bank,
days.
Yeah. And my realtor sent me a text saying, get me my effing money.
It's like Pesci.
That was my welcome to New York.
That should have been your welcome. That's what they say to everyone. When you get, give me my fucking money.
Guys, I'm going to go for a second. I'll be right back.
Okay.
Right back.
Okay, so let me ask you something. Are we still...
Oh, Sam's leaving.
No, okay. Oh, there's a cute lady outside.
There's a lady waving at the window.
All right, so tell me something. Why does London beat out LA?
I love how relaxed this show is. The one of the hosts just like walks out, has a chat with someone. I've done radio.
Too relaxed, in my opinion. That's okay.
I've hosted radio for about 20 years. No, I don't think I've ever done that. Just give me a minute. I've got a guest outside. I know we're on.
No, it's very. It makes me jump into it. Yeah, the driver's seat. It's very uncomfortable. So tell me why London's better than LA.
Well, no, I meant LA's a better place to live. There's just, London is an all-round city where it's not as condensed as Manhattan.
It's so much classier.
It's just slightly easier to live in.
Yeah. I lived in London for a year. I loved everything about it.
I think LA...
Except the prices.
Yeah. In LA, is the best place to live. There's not quite enough to do.
Yeah.
Right, you go with LA, you're like, okay, so I've been to LACMA, you know.
I hiked.
I've been to Grand Central Market. Yeah, I've been to Runyon.
So you've been pretty much everything. Yeah, the Runyon, everybody goes to. You want to be in nature, and suddenly you're like with half of LA at Runyon Canyon, right? Am I correct?
Sam's back, everyone. How is your guest? All right? Yeah, everything okay?
Yeah, everybody's okay. Thank God. My God, you know, sometimes you just go... What the hell, you know? What are people thinking? But for those of you just joining us, we have Richard Bacon here. And let's quickly introduce what it is, why you're here for. Yeah. You're part of National Geographic Channel now. Mm. And you have a show, a new show that you're launching?
I do.
What's it called?
It's called Explorer. Okay. And Explorer is actually a show that's been on Nat Geo for about 30 years. Yes. Well, it's existed for about 30 years. It's been on several channels. And it's a one-hour documentary series, and we're relaunching it as a talk show with three documentaries in it. Mm. And so it's it'll look a bit like a talk show in that we have a studio audience and a big studio, but I introduce three documentaries, and they are often quite hard-hitting documentaries. Mm. Uh-huh. So we show you these stories shot around the world, and then we talk about them in the studio.
Is it always about nature documentaries? It could be anything.
No, it's about ISIS. We made a lovely film about hallucinogenic honey.
Sounds everyone good loves to me. That one. Where did you find it?
We had to send an adventure photographer up to the top of a cliff.
Oh, wow.
Sounds like a cartoon.
Yeah, I know. That's the sort of thing I'd only do if I was hallucinating.
Yeah, right.
He actually did it for real. And then at the end of the show, we handed out some of that honey to all of the studio
audience.
Get
out of here.
Yeah, we did.
And it was... Okay. I was like, do you have any in your back pocket?
Well, she's paying attention, so...
I did promise him that. I was like, look, Oprah gave you a car.
And you get high, and you get high.
Yeah, right?
That's so funny.
So it's just big stories. We have a team of correspondents around the world at all times. So right now, there are people in Pakistan, in Istanbul, in France. We're filming everywhere. And they're beautifully made documentaries. There are 25 episodes in the first series, so we are making 75 documentaries.
Dang.
Wow.
And some are in America, a lot of them are around the globe. So we are...
Right. Are you going to be traveling too, or do you only host the show from the studio?
No, I do some. I went to live with some refugees in Italy recently.
Wow, how cool.
To tell a story about a town that really welcomes refugees. So it's about a better way to handle them. This town, a lot of their... It's called Camini, and it's right in the south of Italy. A lot of their young people left and went to Rome to get jobs. So they welcome refugees, gave them jobs, gave them houses, and it's turned the town around and the economy.
They made a new generation, basically.
Yeah, so it's just a way of... Because the truth about immigration and refugees is, as almost any economist will tell you, they are good for the economy.
Right.
They're good for GDP. And in the end, and this is a really hard argument to make, but I care very much about immigration and refugees. It's one of the reasons that the Trump campaign makes me angry. Is that one of many?
I was like, come on, there's got to be more.
I think that's the only one. Is that there are more American jobs for American people and there are more British jobs for British people because of immigration.
Mm.
That there may be individuals who can say, I lost my job to a Polish worker. But overall, because the immigrants come here, they often have a strong work ethic, and they work long hours, and they often work for lower wages. In the end, they're doing jobs in the economy that need to be done, and they boost the economy, and they create jobs for Americans.
Okay, so let me... And that's debatable, but we can come back to that later. Not in your mind.
LA's
but,
the nicest place to live, but that's not the...
No,
and
immigrants create jobs.
No,
but it's Sam, how is it debatable?
But the point is...
Wait, how is it debatable? Wait,
okay, that's what I'm trying to say. The thing is, what's debatable is that it doesn't necessarily help American jobs, okay? And also, we were talking about We love immigrants in America. You don't understand. It's illegal immigrants we have a problem with. You can't let the borders be open so anybody will come in here. And people do. I know of people that come in here through the borders. Not, I don't know them personally, but I know of, okay? And they come through the borders, or more people even just overstay their visa and they never leave. So the thing is, they become integrated. I understand. Then they give them amnesty, and then more people are saying, well, America is lenient, so we'll all come here. But let me ask you this question, Richard. Why do you think everybody moves here? What's your opinion? Why does everybody come to America and to L.A.? Well, it seems like that's where everybody's moving to, wouldn't you say?
What do you mean by everybody?
Well, most people that move from other countries, where do
come
they
to
go?
L.A.?
No, I think they go to America. There's a lot of European migration.
It's huge into Germany at the moment.
Yeah, French, France, Germany.
Germany's taking masses of refugees.
Right. Who do you think? No, those are refugees.
Look, I'm an immigrant to America, aren't I? Right. I came to LA because I work in TV.
Right.
I think a lot of people come from Mexico because
it's close.
It's close. It's literally close. And LA is very tolerant.
What about
place.
From Asia? People coming to America.
Yeah. What about them?
What I'm saying is people do come to America from everywhere, right?
Yeah, they do.
Okay. So what I'm saying is people do.
Can I just challenge something here, which is that what you call illegal immigrants, your border isn't that porous. If you take, it takes 18 months for a refugee from Syria to be vetted, for example. Mm-hmm. They don't just, as Trump says, they don't just walk in.
But I'm not talking about refugees.
No, but you're talking about illegal immigrants.
Right.
The numbers of illegal immigrants coming into America has declined enormously in the last 10 years. It's not as big a problem as people say. And the truth is that most of them end up working and paying taxes anyway. Mm.
Okay, you know what? I just realized he's a guest. I really don't want to get into political confrontations with you, really.
I was just backed out of that one.
Yeah, exactly. And, and Tori's just sitting there going, well, where's this going? Yeah. But no, let's go back to what you do and stuff. So you were a broadcaster. Are you still a broadcaster at the BBC?
I do some, yeah. I still host some radio. I'm hosting a couple of shows for a radio station called BBC Radio 2. Uh-huh. Very big station. It's the biggest in Europe.
When did you start that career in radio?
When I started when I was 17, 18 at a BBC small station in a region. And I then went to children's television, and I got famously fired from a children's TV show.
Wait, I got to hear the story. Can you do it in 2 seconds or what?
Yeah, yeah.
We have plenty of time.
Yeah, I want to hear this.
It's easy. I got caught taking cocaine.
There you go. That's easy, right?
Were you in a child's costume?
It's a funny story. They didn't find it funny.
No.
So I got called. It wasn't on camera.
Oh, damn it. I thought you were in like a Barney outfit being like, like up the mascot, you know?
No,
in the nose.
I wasn't like.
Damn it. Very good job.
Yeah.
So that was when cocaine was pretty popular, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think it still is as far as I'm aware. But
Really? You see, because I'm not in the scene
it's
at all.
In the East Coast, it's more popular, too.
Really?
Not that I know anything about it.
Because in L.A., it was the hottest thing in the 80s and 90s.
In the 80s, cocaine was gold.
Yeah.
How do I know?
Really
I'm
was,
so young, I have no idea.
I think it's still popular. I think it's basically the reason that people may have gone off it now is that it's sort of mixed with stuff. Maybe in the 80s
it laced
it was
with
pure, but it's largely full of rat poison and doesn't do much. So, I mean, it's really not worth the risk anymore.
Terrible risk.
So I did that, and then I went back into radio. I worked at a radio station called BBC Radio 5 Live, which is a rolling current affairs station. So I covered news and current affairs. I covered both of Obama's elections in America. I was in Grant Park when
really?
He made his
oh,
first
wow.
speech.
How cool.
I was standing near Oprah, who was crying.
Don't even say you're near Oprah.
I met Oprah the other day.
Don't say that. Don't do that to me. No. Oh, yeah, Nat Geo and Owen. That's right.
Yeah. No. I was doing a photo shoot. I met her. I was dressed as a man who'd been beaten up by a polar bear when I met Oprah.
Another story I'm going to have to understand.
And then, later I had a shower and came out of the bathroom with nothing but a tiny towel around my waist, and I ran into her again.
Shut up.
Oh, wow.
Is this in your dreams or like this really happened?
Oh, I must have had some of that honey.
I think the honey is in your system.
No, I just said to her, look, I want you to know I'm normally a bit more normal than this.
Did she laugh?
Which is only half true, but she did laugh.
Yeah.
That's funny.
So I've done basically a lot of radio and various bits of telly, but most of my career has been radio.
That's very cool. Yeah. So now you guys were reaching what area? Like most of England? Would you say pretty much with the signal that you had, BBC?
Yeah. All of the United Kingdom. Because the BBC station, well, the first station I worked at was just one town.
Okay.
But the Radio 2 where I work now.
That's everywhere.
has enormous. So I sometimes host the Drive Time show on Radio 2, which has 6 million listeners.
So a few. You have a few. You're growing.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's growing. The station overall has 15 million.
Damn.
Awesome. So so you become a host. They you guys call it a presenter or something?
Yeah,
right?
We do. Yeah.
So and then so you were a classic. I mean, a classic fit for this show. Right? I mean, you're hosting the show.
Yeah.
You're presenting it. Tell us a little bit about more about the show. What is it that... You have an audience in the show, right?
Yeah, we have a studio. We're trying, in a way, it's turning documentary making or the telling of stories through documentary into an event. Mm. And so the show opens with a type of monologue, which is called The Numbers. And there's kind of a theme to each show. So we've covered race and surveillance. We did a show about death. I think our first show is about death.
Good start. Great good, start. Yeah. Super happy start.
Start with our own death.
Very interesting, yeah.
And I start with a thing called The Numbers. So I will... There'll be numbers relate to the subject. So with race, I can recall some, I'd say 500. That's how many white billionaires there are in the United States of America. 3. That's how many black billionaires there are in the United States of America. So it's illustrating points through numbers. And we kind of use humor as well to help illustrate the point. So it's Nat Geo. You will learn so much information in a single episode. And we're trying to put energy and wit and humor into it too.
Did you pitch this? Like, is this coming from you?
No, it's coming. I mean, it's been around for a while. We're all involved creatively because we're creating something from scratch. So I've been involved with the show for about 3 months, and in the office, we're all talking about what we do, and I'm involved in writing the scripts. And so creatively, we're all in on it, but I certainly didn't pitch it. And so it opens with the numbers and information and a monologue. And then we go to our first documentary, which is like 9 or 10 minutes long. The second doc is probably 7 or 6, and the final one is about 4. And in between, we have panel discussions, one-on-one interviews, occasionally a performance. We're just trying to do great storytelling in a new way.
And educate. I mean, that's like, you could put that on in a classroom and learn more from that, I bet, than like a long algebra, you know, class.
And I hope some of our documentaries make you angry. You know, we've done a piece about a town called Gretna where more African-Americans are arrested per capita than anywhere else in the country. We've got a fantastic shorter documentary about a group of Syrian expats who now live in Istanbul who make a satirical newspaper that they then, at great personal danger to themselves, drive into Syria. So they're trying to take on ISIS with satire. And they also make satirical videos they put on YouTube.
And I thought I was brave going to CVS.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
I feel brave enough just introducing the film. Yeah. But and so
that's insane.
So we tell the story of these people who are trying to take, that's the world's most dangerous newspaper run, where they get it into Syria.
Right.
I get people to read jokes about ISIS.
Yeah,
because if anyone takes themselves seriously in the world, it's ISIS.
Oh my God.
Right?
No cartoon, nothing. You can't draw them, can't do anything.
No, but they can't deal with humor. So
nothing.
It's a very effective weapon. So these are, so from hallucinogenic honey to that dangerous newspaper.
It's a wide range.
You know, it's kind of a wide range of
Trump
stuff.
Can't deal with humor either. That's the thing. When Hillary employed Robert Smigel, the guy who does Triumph the Insult Dog, and he helped write the tweets against him that are really funny. Like, just delete your account, sir. I mean, just... And he goes crazy because he doesn't have a sense of humor.
Yeah, right.
That's what's sociopathic about him. There's no humor.
It's the more autocratic people are in leadership, the less they can deal with
humor. Yeah, yeah, yeah. The dictators aren't that... They don't have a funny bone. Hitler wasn't that hilarious.
Yeah, they're too serious all the time. Yeah. They need to mellow out with some of that honey. Some of this legalized marijuana
we need some of that.
Have here, yeah.
So, marijuana, honey, cocaine. We're covering all the drugs.
Yeah. Tell me something. How is cannabis in the UK right now? Partly legal, medical, not at all?
I thought you were going to ask me like about the quality of it.
No, I will. How is the quality of it? Do you guys?
I don't know. I don't really like cannabis. I've tried it plenty of times. It always hurts my throat.
But you don't have to smoke it. That's the point.
You can eat it too.
Yeah.
But eating, you never know how much you're going to get.
Well, then you check.
If I eat a brownie, I'm either going to just feel good or see God. One or the other.
You need to know how, Tori. That's what I'm saying. You need to eat a little at a time.
Oh, I see.
And not say, well, 15 minutes went and I don't feel anything.
Well, I'm not a freshman in high school. I know that.
You've got to wait an hour. I've tried the gummy bear version. You know, you can get it in Sweeties.
Those are very light.
They're light.
Yeah.
No, it's not legal in England. No, for a while, they said if you got caught with a small amount, you would not get arrested. But I think they've even turned, they've revised that. Mm. I think it's a shame. For me, I probably would legalize drugs altogether. I think that it just creates a black market and it fuels
and
crime.
Yes.
The war on drugs created more drugs.
There's just no evidence
of the war
on drugs.
And it's hopeless because you can't curb people's appetite for drugs and mind-altering things. I mean, they tried prohibition. It didn't work with alcohol here. You know,
but it's also,
this country loves its alcohol.
But also in this country, it's often young people and quite often African-American people who are caught with some drugs on them when they're 17, 18, 19, 20. And then they're kind of done.
Cause in even the system, when, that's
when
right.
When they're out of prison, it's always on their record.
Right.
And it's just finishing people off because of something they did when
and
they were 19.
And that's why I'm pissed at Obama, because it was the amount of African-Americans per capita that are so outrageously irrationally compared to the whites that have been in jail for marijuana use that haven't been addressed. That's why I think he really missed the ball. And Eric Holder said he would do something about it, and nothing was done. Department of Justice did nothing. And I'm a big Obama fan, huge, but they really dropped the ball on marijuana, I have to say.
Yeah, he's pardoning quite a lot of people, isn't he?
Yeah, but it's not the same when as the first African-American president to recognize the problem of blacks being arrested more than whites and not address it in some way, like an executive order, like getting the, you know, gay rights legalized. He did a lot that he wanted to do, but this had no one touched anything.
No.
They raided more places. I mean, it's a very odd thing between
the two. It's a shame he's not done more.
Yeah, I really agree.
I went for a walk with him recently in Yosemite.
Who are you?
You went on a walk with Obama?
Yeah, in Yosemite.
Where?
In Yosemite, we went for a walk together.
I believe you, but tell us about it.
This is insane. How are you burying this lead? How was it?
Burying the lead.
That's so good.
Yeah, it was lovely. We went. We walked through some redwood trees together. It was just me and him. He drove there himself. He was late because he couldn't find anywhere to park. And that's obviously not true. He arrived by a military helicopter. With a second military helicopter.
Yeah, there's two of them.
It's a cool way for a guest to land. I mean, Marine One landed in a field near our walk, and then he got out. The motorcade was also there. Secret Service were obviously there. They were casually dressed, unusually.
Were they looking like bad lumberjacks, like they tried too hard?
They were in white T-shirts. Oh. It was just unusual. They're in white T-shirts, but they still got the earpieces and the sunglasses. And then there was a second set of security who were people with machine guns. And so I'm talking to him for National Geographic, and on the camera, it looks like it's just me and him going through some redwood trees. But behind the camera, I can see all these people with machine guns tracking backwards. And then just out of shot is a 20-car motorcade containing an ambulance with his own blood in it and the nuclear launch codes. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's what they say about hiking. You know, come prepared.
You really.
You know,
I think
exactly.
You really bug spray.
If you need the red button there, then you take it with you.
That's right. Hiking is dangerous.
Yeah.
Well, that's very cool. That's very cool. I mean, that's one experience you're not going to forget.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was he like a cool hiker? Like, was he good or kind of nerdy?
No, he was good. I mean, when you interview politicians, he very much controls an environment like that because you're already kind of nervous because you're meeting the president.
It is. And it's the biggest job in the world.
And it's all these helicopters and cars and people with guns around you. In the end, he's in control of the environment. We had a really nice conversation.
Yeah.
I got a very nice message back from the White House saying he'd enjoyed it. And it was rather lovely.
Any M&Ms?
I know. The Air Force One M&Ms.
Yeah.
We're hoping to talk to him again for our show, actually, because we've got Nat Geo has a very good relationship with him and with the White House. He was part of a recent documentary of ours as well. I mean, he likes Nat Geo.
That's how you ended up there with the president because of the relationship
Nat Geo.
He's a history buff and a Nat Geo fan.
In one of his answers, he talked a lot about National Geographic and about how it's opened the eyes of the world to its cultural wonders.
Yeah.
So, we're very lucky to have that good relationship. But he gives quite long answers.
Yeah,
Long pauses.
I know. With Bill Maher, he was like, look. And then it was just like a truck ran through and he's like, this is how I feel. I'm like, a little faster.
Well, he has to think about it.
No, I know. He's great.
I mean, you have to watch every word you say.
Oh, yeah.
He's very thoughtful. He has two modes, doesn't he? This is the campaigning mode where he is full of energy. And I think there's the interview mode, which is also true of his press conferences, where he thinks very carefully about what he says. And they're actually, I now have observed it up, they're two very distinct modes.
Yeah, the low-key.
The cleverness about going slow, though, I would never do that. I like to get a lot of words out, is you don't make a mistake. There's a confidence, I think, in standing at a podium at a press conference And just stopping and being silent whilst you work out your thoughts and carrying on.
And there's a gravitas that you give yourself when you do that.
Yeah.
Everyone's waiting on you. And to be honest, he's a constitutional scholar. Mm-hmm. And when you see constitutional discussions, there's these long sort of Talmudic pauses. So that's sort of his background. Is
yeah,
it long,
is. Yeah.
It's not like, I know, I'm like, speak faster, go, go, go. And he's like, let me think. But it makes for, it does, it makes for a more thoughtful answer.
Yeah, that's so. True. I mean, you speak more slowly, you
right,
know.
And right.
Yeah, you don't want to talk too fast. As a politician, and that's what I'm saying. I mean, we get Trump, we get someone who's the total opposite. He doesn't care a shit about what he says.
Right.
You know? He'll say anything.
He'll tweet anything.
And so, I don't know if we want a president like that. I don't know.
I think we're pretty sure we don't. I'm pretty sure.
At any rate, Richard Bacon, the star of Explorer, it's a new show, and not a new show, it's a relaunch.
Yeah,
right?
That's right.
What it says.
Yeah.
A relaunch of a show called Explorer on Nat Geo, and I see it's launching November 14th, so that's next week.
Nice.
Exactly a week from today, yeah. Actually, at 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific. And I see your interests, travel, food,
what's
politics.
What's like the scariest thing you've ever done? Because you seem to be like the Dos Equis dude.
What is the scariest thing I've ever
done?
Yeah,
what's like kind of, I want to know what like jarred you. Because you seem like calm and cool in any, you're like, yeah, I met Obama and Oprah in my underwear. Like what made you kind of want to pee your pants?
I did a bungee jump once.
There you go.
Where was it? Where did you do it?
It was the world's largest indoor bungee jump. It was in Canada. And it was an indoor, which made it worse. Because when you're indoor, you can see your fall relative to kind of... Because you can see the wall next to you.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You're more aware of the speed at which you're traveling.
Uh-huh.
Does that make
so
sense?
True, yes.
That's true, right?
And you can see the water rushing towards you. I still don't think they're very safe bungee jumps, and I had to do it for a TV show,
right.
The same one I got sacked from. And I wish I got sacked before that.
Yeah, I know.
Right.
Should have taken the drugs sooner.
Totally.
That was horrible, and I wouldn't do it again.
Yeah, you see, we were talking to the photographer, remember, what's his
Andre
name?
Dumont,
Andre,
yes.
And he went to places where they actually do this, I forget what islands it was on, where they actually, the natives do bungee jumping, but from the trees. And sometimes they hit their heads on the ground.
Yeah, right.
It's like a rite of passage.
The whole point is to get right there so you don't hit the ground.
Yeah.
And some of them, I mean, can you imagine?
Yeah.
Can you imagine hitting the ground?
That happens. That's happened a few times.
Yeah.
I feel like bungee jumping is like not that safe. I feel like it's 70%, but maybe that's just, I see a lot of like...
You're right, but they rarely have accidents.
I guess.
You know?
I just feel like it's something you don't need to do.
Yeah, why is
What's
that
the
there?
Point
I totally agree.
Why don't you just... Yeah,
just
don't
jump
do it.
You
yeah,
can
just
get through
cliff
life.
Dive or something.
Yeah. You can get through life. What
why
about jumping off
a
plane?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just
hike with Obama.
Would you jump
it's
off
fine.
A plane? Would you
skydiving?
Jump? Yeah, skydiving.
With or without a parachute?
With a parachute.
Because the answer is no, both
Again, it's just I know, I'm the same way.
I don't know. I find life engaging and interesting and exciting enough where I don't need to do a parachute jump.
Right.
I think that's what I would do if life is a bit boring. I just don't see the point of it.
Well, some people with terminal cancer, bringing back hallucinogenics, find that at the end of their life, they have nothing to look forward to. LSD and certain hallucinogenics can create a moment they'll never forget.
Right.
So they're giving LSD as a sort of psychological treatment for those at the end of their lives to experience a moment of at least bliss that they can
Isn't
have.
Isn't that interesting?
Isn't that interesting? So I think because at least that their life is probably very boring and they can't go bungee jumping. So
that's what's interesting. Those drugs like mushrooms and LSD, they are the drugs that seem to tap into a part of the brain that the others don't. And
right.
I can see the logic behind that.
Yeah, it's a big push to try and get that as a treatment for those in hospice, which I think
Amazing.
Is kind of cool.
Great.
Yeah, no,
my grandmother would have loved it.
They've got nothing to lose at that point.
Yeah.
Anyway, you know?
My grandmother-in-law is 101, and she looked at me and goes, I've lived an obscene amount of time.
Yeah, right.
She's just ready to go.
She's ready.
But it's like, you know, 101, and we said, what's the most interesting thing that ever happened to you in your whole life? Because she had indoor plumbing, TV, the first woman president, like what? And she goes, I go, the man on the moon, and we're taping her. And she goes, that wasn't that exciting to me. So I'm like, all right. So she can't be excited, but she did try sushi at 100, and she really liked it.
That's awesome.
I fed her sushi.
Born when the First World War was on.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
This woman is like, and when we asked her about Trump, my husband took some photos and some video and said, what do you think of this Trump and Roger Ailes? Because they were on. And this 101-year-old woman goes, I think he's repulsive. hilarious. That's
good.
She's got the collective cumulative wisdom of 101 years.
She's like an owl. She's like a living owl.
It's hard to argue with that.
Yeah, that's a lot. Did you guys ever see the movie Altered States?
No.
Of course.
Yeah, you've got to see that with William Hurt when he was young. And it's the best movie because he gets to experiment different parts of his brain with all kinds of drugs he finds with like Indians, like Native Indians, and or in South America. I think also
is it a documentary? I don't think I've seen that.
No, it's a real. It's a movie. It's a fiction.
Oh, I think you said Altered Plates, story. And I was like, oh, altered, food thing, yeah.
Altered States. Altered States.
This is like a drugs show. Totally. This is the only subject that comes up. Look about that plastic bag.
Right. We talk about everything.
Look
here,
underneath.
You,
look underneath.
Comes
your desk right
here. Maybe it's because you're willing to talk about it without.
Is that when he
it,
left the studio? Was he nipping for loop?
Did you see him?
Is that what was happening?
Yeah, okay, exactly.
No, we were being distracted.
You got
by
the track marks.
I know what's going on.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, what was that about?
So
know?
It's like, can I ask you?
That was his dealer.
She was so unassuming.
And not only that, I mean, she's someone I know.
Yeah.
And she's part of the station, actually. But she just wanted to watch a show. And I said, it's distracting. I'm an easily distracted person.
Oh, he's ADHD.
Yeah. No, I'm not.
Oh, I mean ADD. Oh, no.
None of it, really.
Oh, I am.
But, I mean, I've got enough problems on my own with with names and stuff, you know. But not that, no. But although I am like restless, I can't sit in one place too long. Mm-hmm. But I don't see it as ADHD. I mean, I pay attention. I can focus. You can see how much I can focus.
Very true.
During the show. But if someone is at like the corner of my eye that doesn't belong there, yeah, I get distracted all the time.
When I was hosting a Reels channel and they wanted my attention, they'd shake keys.
Really?
Shiny objects. And I'd be like, hello? It was demeaning. And then it was a joke, though. Right? I didn't mean to sound. It sounded pretty bad. There was a weird silence there. But we're moving on.
My wife, forgot a book on her bedstand the other day called Living with Someone with ADHD.
That's hilarious.
That's funny.
Yeah.
So you lived in LA.
Yeah.
How long did you live here for?
A year and a half.
And then was that like, did you move here directly from the UK?
Yeah.
Okay. And then you moved to where?
To West Village in New York.
West Village in New York.
So I lived in Hancock Park here near Larchmont.
Which is a beautiful area of LA.
It's great. I was back there yesterday.
You're missing it. I can tell.
Yeah, I'm missing it so much. And we just had... we made a lot of proper friends here. For the first 6 months, I only hung out with fellow Brits. Mm. Uh-huh. There's a lot of Brits here.
Where do you guys go? Is there bars I can go to?
Probably, yeah.
Where? In Larchmont?
No, but like, is there places to go when you have it with Brits? Is there like a...
Like in LA?
Yeah. We all go to Soho House, which is a members club.
Sure,
which
is owned
by British
once.
People.
Felt so cool.
There's a new one in Malibu that's also excellent. And that's about it.
Nice.
So what took you away from LA? Why did you move to New York?
For this job, partly.
Oh, I see. Okay. So it's done in New York?
The studio is in New York. The studio is at the CBS in Midtown in New York.
Nice.
Okay.
We share a studio with John Oliver.
So you get to live some of that.
Yeah.
And you can always come back to LA later, right? Later
I think
career.
I probably will at some point.
Yeah.
I miss it. I've got a 5-year-old and he was in a lovely school here called Wagon Wheel.
It sounds so nice.
It's just so cute.
They sound like Kumbaya. Yeah, it sounds perfect.
It was that.
Wagon Wheel, we're never sad.
Well, it was a bit Kumbaya. They had... There's 15 kids in his class and 3 teachers.
Yeah, come on.
And they did yoga and meditation most of the time.
They did it better. They got it better than anyone.
And I've gone and put him in a public school in New York just because I think it might be good for him. And so it's like taking him from Wagon Wheel, where they do yoga and meditation. He couldn't write the first letter of his own name. But
he can find his chakras.
Well, yeah, he knew Downward Dog. He could come home and show me how to do it. I thought maybe that was perfect. Maybe it's time for him to learn to write. So I put him in a public school to speak.
It's only 5,
bit.
Right?
Yeah, right.
And he's in a class of 25 with one teacher versus
overworked.
A class of 15 with 3 teachers. Mm-hmm. But it's like we've taken him out of a tiny little... country club and put him in prison.
Yeah, it's like
take him out of a bubble, you know? You need to get your kid out there.
Dude, I went to school and we call our teachers by their first name in DC. GDS is very open, Kumbaya, first integrated school, totally like that, no cafeteria, sat on the ground and ate. And then I went to University of Michigan and was like, what the fuck am I doing here? Same cult, and it was terrible.
Whoa.
But I learned to write.
Yeah,
so that's the
key thing you can write.
There you go.
So I miss Wagon Wheel. I miss being part of that school. I miss this place. It's just, it's also a year and a half. We made proper friends, but it was a bit too soon to leave them all.
Because that is not a long time to be here.
No.
Usually I get a 5-year and you're feeling like you're kind of home and you're getting there, but like a 1.5 is you're in, you're out.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Did you go to college? Before you started your career?
Yeah, I did. I went. I'm actually from a place called Nottingham. So I lived in London for 20 years. So I went to college up there. A place called Nottingham, which is in the middle of England, where Robin Hood comes from.
Yeah.
Where he robs from the rich and gives
to the poor.
Thank you. I.e. socialism, folks, just in case you didn't know.
Exactly.
I would take that any day, my friend.
I'm sure you would.
I would.
Because you'd be on the receiving end, right?
I like
is that. Is that what you're thinking?
No, I think that...
Until you start making a nice, decent living, and then you won't go for that.
Yeah, but in like when you use an ambulance, that's a socialist thing. When you have fire trucks, or
no,
those are all socialist.
No, we pay for that.
Yeah, you pay for that, but that's what socialism is. You all pay and you all get the same.
It's collective.
No,
it's
collective.
But in socialism... Well, okay. Why are we getting into this?
Well, no, but of course that's what
it's
it is.
It's always politics, right?
Always, I mean, Medicare, all these things are types
we
of...
We live in a lot of it.
I think in America you have these things where it's
no,
like...
No, of course, to a certain extent. Right. Nobody's talking about extremes, you know what I'm saying?
Well, except in America, socialism is like a dirty word.
Right.
And no one seems to like grade it on a scale.
Right.
So, of course, you have some social progress, socialist programs.
Exactly.
You have Medicaid and you have Medicare and you have ambulances and you have roads that are paid for by everybody.
And bridges and
You have some socialism. And that's why I don't understand why it has to be so binary. Like
that's why I like Bernie Sanders, because he didn't, he decriminalized the word socialism a little bit at least.
You have socialism in America and you couldn't live without it.
Exactly.
Well, let's just say anybody at a certain point has paid their share here. I think because, like, for example, when you're employed most of your life, then you pay into Medicare, you pay into all that stuff. So everybody pays into it. You can't, you know, and okay, you know what, guys? I really don't want to get into politics. But no, because I want this to be a light, pleasant show, because we have Richard here and we're talking about entertainment. We're talking about entertainment and geography and everything. No, and you know what? Truly, when you're back in LA, you're totally welcome. We'll do a whole politics show. So it's not like I'm trying to shut you up or anything by any means. I'm trying to shut me up in essence. But when you come back, I want this to be about your show.
Oh, okay.
Because that's why you're here, right?
Yeah.
Okay. But I didn't want to know. So what did you, always focused on entertainment?
No. So my radio show on the BBC was News and Current Affairs, the one that I did for 7 or 8 years.
Okay.
The other radio station I mentioned earlier, the bigger BBC one, is more entertainment and music. But I've hosted game shows, reality shows, documentaries.
Did you grow up wanting that? Mm-hmm. Were you born? I was born out of the womb wanting that.
I wanted to be in radio from a young age. I think
it's fascinating stuff, huh?
When I was 14, 15, I was so into it. I even knew where all of the transmitters were around the county that I lived in. And that was my dream. And I couldn't get into it to start with. And I finished my what we call A-levels, which are exams you take when you're about 18. And I just wanted to go straight into radio. But I hadn't got a job then. And my dad was pressuring me, saying, look, you either go to uni or you get a job. And I said, well, I want to work in radio. And he said, that's not really an option right now. You've got to do something. Pick a career. He said, at one point, he barked at me, become a firefighter. Out of nowhere. Just become a firefighter.
My dad's like, you're an environmental lawyer. Go.
Yeah.
What?
Why? I'm your son. Why do you want me to run towards fire?
It's dangerous. Exactly. Seems dangerous.
It's a great job. But, it's...
It's funny. It's funny, but people do that. Fathers do that.
Yeah. And so, I managed to get some work experience. Do you call it work experience in America? What do you call
Interning?
It? Interning. At a BBC station, I think I did a day, and then they just gave me a weekend job, and I built up from there.
It's always like that. Awesome. You're in the mailroom, and all of a sudden, now you're the top agent.
Yeah.
It's always starting.
Yeah.
You got to. He started from the bottom. Now he's here.
Awesome. Well, we're almost out of time, folks. If you're just joining us, well, you'll just have to run the replay, right?
Mm-hmm. Are we almost out of time?
Richard Bacon, star of the show Explorer, on Nat Geo Channel. And so we said this starts next Monday, right? November 14 at 10 a.m. Eastern and Pacific.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be watching it. You know, I mean, I definitely want to watch it. And I have Nat Geo, so I don't watch the channel that much. But then again, I don't watch anything that much. I'm not on TV at all, almost. Just CNN is on the back in the background, so I know what the latest headlines are, and pretty much it. You know?
Well, we're sort of relaunching it and rebranding it a bit. So from next Monday, the look of the channel changes. We're dropping the word channel. We're actually not. We're just going to be called National Geographic instead of a National Geographic
that
channel.
Good.
It's better.
It's a more aerodynamic title.
It is more aerodynamic.
Well, that's because
we're all too busy to say
I think they were trying to distinguish between that and the magazine and the website and everything.
I think it's more like bringing it all together and making it more contemporary all at the same time.
And that's why they are taking out the channel and it'll be like all one holistic thing.
But that's the idea. I hope we're still going to take some time to really work out our show completely, but where we're heading is that our show, I think, makes the use of everything that Nat Geo already is. It's a counterintuitive organization, Nat Geo. It's a 128-year-old magazine on the one hand that will still give a photographer a decent budget to spend 6 weeks photographing a bee. But at the other extreme, it's the biggest company in the world on social media. It's got 65 million followers on Instagram alone.
Wow.
And so it's old and new media. And I want our show to kind of harness
that dichotomy.
To take photos from the archive, but also put short form stuff on social. Mm. And that's what we're trying to achieve. So our show exists on the channel, but the best of our documentaries and the best of our content will also go on social as well. That's really the idea. But we're launching, we have a new show called Mars starting next Monday. Mm-hmm. So that's 9 p.m. next Monday. Mm-hmm. A huge show that's part drama, part documentary with people like Elon Musk explaining how we'll get to Mars. And a drama made by Ron Howard about people flying to Mars in, was it 2023? Terry's here from Nat Geo.
It feels like it's just Nat Geo or National Geographic has just been like updated a bit.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I'm saying? I always love National Geographic, but now it's like gone. Like Snapchat and Instagram, it just became like more millennial discussion.
Right, and I think it's partly you want to remind people it's there and get it noticed again. And so we're just having these big shows with a big push with marketing. We got bought by Fox, which meant that budgets increased basically. And so there's just this fresh impetus. They're very passionate about it.
Great.
It's just it's.
I have to cut you off right now because we're totally out of time. We're running over into the next show. So tell people how they can find you, social media, how they can contact you.
On Twitter, I'm Richard Letter P. Bacon. Uh-huh. I want to build up my Instagram more than anything. That's also Richard P. So
go ahead.
Please, I'm going to put some nice Nat Geo photos on there. Some nice photographs about me and my family. And
Obama
socialism
and
it'll all be there.
Awesome.
Richard Letter P. Bacon. B-A-C-O-N.
Americans know how to spell bacon, okay?
Yes. We love bacon. All right, Richard. Thank you so much. Terry, thank you for making it happen. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Tori, have a wonderful day. And we'll see everybody tomorrow.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Tori, only on LA Talk Radio.